Okay, folks, we are at 7:30, so I'm going to go ahead now. Actually, let me just get my bearings here and chat. And I am going to go now and mute all. And as usual, everybody will have the ability to unmute themselves. Please feel free to do so if you have comment or question, and remute yourself afterwards. Keep background noise to minimum. If you don't and you make noise in the background, I will unceremoniously remute you for you. Later on this evening, courtesy of Alan's work, the contents of the deck, the audio track, and the contents of the chat window will go up on our website. So feel free to grab those to review the content after the fact. If we have any new people with us tonight, thanks for joining. As always, we allow guests to attend any of our meetings. However, if you want to join, by all means, check out on our website the Join or Renew button, and you can join using either PayPal or a credit card or a snail mail check sent off to our email, our postal address. And with that, I think I will turn it over to Alan to lead us through tonight's deck.
Okay, thank you, Chris. And we're going to start off with a follow-up from last week. Last week was our regular monthly meeting, and I was talking about Google Sites, and one of the questions came up, whether you could access the HTML code behind a Google Site. And I hadn't seen this on Google Sites when I was playing around with it. I didn't think it was going to be available, but I really didn't know. So, in answer to the questions from Harvey and Dennis, Chris's favorite and Bob Harris's favorite is Perplexity AI. So we're going to ask them whether you can access the HTML code for a page that's being edited in Google Sites. And you'll notice it basically says, number one, you can't directly edit the HTML on the Google page. And number two, you can embed custom HTML into your Google Sites page. If you know how to code it, then you can actually use it in Google Sites, but you can't directly access the HTML file. And then it says to look at the HTML code that's there, you've got a number of options to do that. And the important thing here is underlined in red. Google Sites uses a lot of JavaScript, and it's generating stuff on the fly, dynamically, as they say. And so the page structure is going to be pretty complicated. And we'll see that that is true in just a second. So normally, you would go to a website like this one, and this is one of the examples I gave you of HTML code. And I'm repeating this here because the example was this header, this red and white header here. And I pointed out that the background color in the HTML code in this table, because this is a table, a one row and one column table, it had a background color of red, it had a font color of white, and I pointed out I was using Chris's favorite typeface, which is Comic Sans MS. He really loves that. So I'm sure he's happy that I'm using that for the header of this web page. Anyway, the important thing is here that if you look at the actual code that is driving this page in a browser, this is my HTML editor again, and I'm highlighting that just the title here in the header of the HTML page, and it just said roadsafetyresearch.ca. So I have uploaded that HTML file to a web server. So when you go to the website and we're feeding you this HTML page, and your browser is displaying it in full Technicolor. Now, if you go to your browser and you go to Tools and then Developer Tools, this is actually Vivaldi, but all of the browsers have some kind of feature like this. So if you get to Developer Tools, then you will be able to, you'll get this pop-up window here. There's a tree directory on the left here, so I can go down to this file called index.htm, which is the home page for this website. And in this window, you see the actual HTML code, and you can see there is the header with the actual title of the page. So you can very easily in this system, because it's a straightforward HTML page on a web server, you can very easily look at the underlying code. But if we go to the Google Sites page that I had, and we look at the Texas page, then you notice that we're coming down here, and this is a page called Texas. But now you notice that there's a whole bunch of script tags. So you remember that Perplexity said Google Sites uses a lot of JavaScript. So there are lines and pages of this kind of stuff here. So it's really hard to wade through to find out what you want to do in terms of what is driving this page. But if you persist, you persevere, and you scroll down through some of this stuff, eventually you'll get to this section down here, which has an outer HTML tag. I think I've got a close-up of something like that. So here's my actual page. Texas is the heading. The subtext is some of the neat birds seen. And you can see here that there is some code which says the outer text is Texas, some line feeds, and then some of the neat birds. So there is the code, but it's buried in all this other stuff, and it's really hard to figure out what's going on. This is actually Firefox. And if you use Firefox, then you get this inspector option here. And one of the nice things about Firefox is you can actually, there's a search box. So I can look for neat birds, because I know that's part of the title, and it will highlight, here's a, this time it's a class description with that style, some of the neat birds. So again, it's in there somewhere, but I think it's really hard to find. Okay, so that's all I have on HTML code and no HTML code in Google Sites. Okay, so next up we have an offering from Tom. You remember a few weeks ago, Tom had offered to tell us about Bridgebase Online, and Tom is going to share his screen. He has a presentation for us, and then I think he might even have a live demo. So Tom, when you're ready, take it away. You need to, yeah, there you go.
Yes, I'm ready. Let me start this up. And share my screen. That's odd. Okay. Place current share. And this should be it. And share.
Yes.
So, playing bridge in Bridgebase Online. Well, some of you may not know what bridge is, aside from old people play it. So, what is contract bridge? It's a card game, 52 cards. People take tricks, and people make bids. It's similar to Euchre, 500, or Wizard. Because there's bidding and there's tricks. Now, there is a trump, but there's no wild cards or no bowers like there is in Euchre. And there are penalties for not making your contracted bid. Scoring is total points. So you get points for tricks, and you get bonuses for making specific kinds of contracts, like games and slams. That's the basic set of points. But online and in tournaments, there are things called match points. It's basically your percentile compared to the others on the same hands. In other words, in tournaments, you play the same hands as everybody else, and you're compared to them as to how well you did on the same hands compared to the other people using the very same hands. There's also another scoring thing called IMPs, international match points, and those are basically to make total point groupings a little more I don't know, fair or easier to deal with. So you're not dealing with thousands of points. You're dealing with individual points, and certain things are grouped so that you don't get wildly compensated on one particular contract. So the bidding? Well, bidding is a partnership game. So you both bid, and you communicate by bids. So bids assume a book of six tricks. So a one bid is a book of six plus one more. And a seven bid is six plus seven, which, since there's four hands, there's 13 cards in each hand. That's 13 tricks. So if you bid seven, you're bidding for all the tricks. And when you bid, you set up the contract, which is what you say you're going to make. And you get points for bidding and making games, which is three no trump, four of hearts or spades, or five of clubs or diamonds, or slams, which are six or seven of any suit or no trump. So in bidding, the objectives are to reach, if possible, a game or a slam by identifying strengths, distribution, controls, and of course, stop the opponents from finding their best contract. And you evaluate there are various ways to value your hand, and the valuation changes as the bidding goes on, and that's more of a things you learn as you go along rather than any kind of science. But you get basically there are high card points for aces and court cards, in other words, kings, queens, and jacks. You have points for voids, singletons, doubletons, or for long suits, because they can make more tricks. Because you can, if you have voids or singletons, you can rough the opponent's good cards. And there are other techniques as well for valuing your hand for bidding. And there are a variety of different conventions. 2-over-1 is the most common system in North America. Standard American yellow card is perhaps the second most common. And there are a variety of other systems, precision, A-call, SES, Franc, which is common in France. A-call is common in the UK. And there are great variations on them. And as you go along, you add conventions to them, you subtract conventions from them, until you really have a different total bidding system with each partner that you have. In playing, the dummy is the hand of the partner, of the bid winner's partner. The bid winner is called the declarer, and the declarer's partner is called the dummy. And the declarer decides all the plays from the dummy. So if you're playing a contract of four hearts, for example, and the person on your left leads a card, then you tell the dummy what to play on that card. Of course, you're going to defend about half the time, and there are various card signals to show or ask partner what to play. This is basically has to do with the rank of the card in the sequence, or whether they're odd or even, high and then low, lower and then high. So there's a whole system of card signals, which are constrained by the cards that you do have. But there are various card signals that you use to tell your partner what is the best thing to play next. So there are actually a lot of bridge systems online. There's at least two or three others, but I haven't played much on them at all. And the biggest one and the most common one is called Bridge Face Online. BBO is the term for it, and the actual URL for it is bridgebase.com. With BBO, you don't need an ID, you don't need to sign up, but you can play free versus robots, and there are several different formats. Once you have an ID, you can have paid tournaments for ACBL and BBO Gory. Of course, if you pay money and other people are paying money, probably you have more committed opponents who are probably better. On the other hand, you may not want to start it that way. With an ID, you can make friends and partners and keep a history of what you've done. And in fact, BBO keeps a history of your last 3 months of playing, so you can actually go back and see exactly what you played and what all the opponents played. ACBL, there's an ACBL club inside of BBO, and you can win American Contract Bridge League points. And I think they have tournaments pretty much all day and in and evening in North American time. But BBO is a global club, and you'll find their BBO is a global website, and you'll find there are players from India, from Turkey. Those are the most common, but also Australia, Zimbabwe, China, Hong Kong. Basically, there are players from all around the world. In a lot of the tournaments that you can play in are robot tournaments. They're good for learning, and they play a version of 2-over-1, and these are the system notes that you can see. And the robots try to follow those as much as they can. Everybody criticizes the robots in BBO because they really do some dumb things. I'm afraid AI has not made it into BBO in a big way just yet. So, let's have a demo. So, let's see. Let's log in. And I want to, let's go here, I guess, and Bridges Online. Here's the login screen. If you go up from here, this is what it looked like when you access BridgeBase directly. You can play Bridge now. You don't have to have an ID or anything. You can just play Bridge, sets of four deals. There's a variety of things. BridgeMaster, you can, is a tool to teach you how to play the bridge, in other words, the play of the hand, rather than bidding. And there's more of an explanation of match points and imps. These are different kinds of tourneys. But to log in, you go to this page, and it logs me in. Browsers have started logging me into BBO automatically all the time now. But this here are the variety of choices you can make. You can play a game of solitaire, or play by yourself, just play bridge free, just declare, start a bridge instant tournament. There's Bridge Master that I mentioned before, and there's some more information. I don't do that. In fact, BPO Prime is where you pay a monthly fee, and you don't see any ads, but I've cut them out as as you've probably seen before. I don't really see very many ads because I've cut them all out. Competitors is what I usually play. Casual, you can just find a play. You can take me to the first available seat. I have a partner take us to a table, list interesting tables, start a table with three robots, etc. Help me find a game, find your own game, etc. Practice is just that. It's practice. You can start a bidding table to practice bidding. You can start a teaching table to teach someone how to play bridge. There's Bridge Master, which I mentioned before, and Mini Bridge, which I haven't looked at. But learn them. So this is what you could do, and select your trump suit. Well, it looks like clubs would be good here. I got more of them. How many tricks do you think you can take? Well, I don't know. How about four? And this is what mini bridge is. It's you basically you see your hand and your partner's hand, and then you get to practice playing against the robots. So let's go back to competitive, which is what I do. There are featured errors. This is ACBL World. These are Clubhouse Challenge. You're challenging another partnership, I believe. There are instant tournaments, virtual clubs, Robot World. It shows you all the robot tournaments, basically, and you can choose. Most of these cost money, but some are free. This one is free. Some of the others cost money. BB dollars are approximately $1, and you can buy them in the thing. These are the robot tournaments. They're also running tournaments. Sorry, let's go back to competitive free tournaments. As you can see, there are a whole bunch of free tournaments listed here. There are many during the evenings. BBO runs some. Some of them are individual tournaments. This is the day long, so you basically play against three robots. and you see how well you do compared to other people who have the same hands. As a day long, and again, the day long ones are basically against robots. There's Express, I think that's probably against robots, but there's also ones that are run by individual developers, such or individual tournament directors or hosts, like TD Bluff, Tom Pat, Game Man 500, and so on. Some of these, like this, if I click on here, I could try to register. Here are the details of it. This is the host. Start time is 69 minutes from now. It's pairs. There are 12 boards, and it's about 6 minutes per board, so that's 72 minutes. The scoring is match points, clock, barometer. Directors are these two people, these two IDs. Restrictions are it's only people who are friends or on their include web list who can play. And the description is basically Idioma Hispano plus HD. Idioma Hispano basically means Spanish language, and HD is the sign for the bridge engine to always, if there's a robot play, then if the robot wins, becomes a declarer, and their partner is a person, that person actually becomes a declarer and plays instead of the robot. You can see who's entered. These are people. The colors here of the people, this kind of grayish one means that I'm a friend of them, or I'm following them. And you can look at these individual people and see who they are, like Mert 2020 is from Argentina. A skill level is what you decide you are. Now, when it was created, how many logins you've had, and their compatibility is a series of stars according to how compatible they are with you. In other words, basically whether they're from the same country, same language, and maybe other stuff like that. I'm not quite sure how BBO decides that. This guy, Tanuki, he's also from Argentina. In fact, probably all of these are Spanish-speaking. World class. In fact, the people with the gold stars actually have had success in international tournaments. So he's actually earned that star in the real world. But you can see where they are. They're playing this tournament. They're playing a tournament now that's also run by Arbid that's running. And he's the South. His partner is North. These are the conventions of the table. The player on top is North. And the player on the bottom is South. And then this is West. And this is East. And you can...
A number of people are saying that they really don't know how to play bridge. And they're asking, are you going to show us a sample game?
Okay. Well, let me go a little bit further, and then I'll show you a sample game. So this is... these things here are things. I have BBO Alert, which is a special thing that it's an add-on, a browser add-on that I use, but don't worry about that if you're just deciding to learn. This is the news. These are news things that you can open, hand of the day, and it'll show you what the hand of the day is, and they have a bit of discussion about what you should do and so on, stuff like that. Play in the other, and things are announcements. There's a system maintenance and enjoy some free grains and Equinox Bridge. Get ready to win silver points. That's a silver points are basically BBO, ACBL kinds of points. And Bookworm Bridge Conundrums, etc. There's chat, and I'm not chatting with anyone, but I could send a message to the lobby, or I could send a message to this tournament here. People who are registered, I could send a message to the tournament. The lobby is something I never go to, and nobody else does either. And I have mail. Oh, I got your ego is way up there. Someone doesn't like me. I played with him. I have my own system for goulash, and he doesn't like that. I put you in my ignore list. Well, he doesn't like me. That's well, too bad. And information like I won. This is my result in a particular tournament. And other people contacted me in mail. You can also see who's online, and you can show offline, because this is friends. You can show offline friends. So these are all the friends that are currently online, currently, and I can talk to. The blue people are people who are following me just like I'm following them. So if I go to here, it says that we're a friend. That's what the blue color means. The gray color means that I'm following them, but they haven't followed me back. Okay, so some people want to say, well, let's go, this, here's my history. And these are my scores, how well I did, my ranking, and my percentage. Ints, and otherwise other percentages. Here's my account, password, my real name, etc., my email. I type myself as intermediate, and my country is Canada. And as a director, you have tournaments where you can, these are how the tournaments are set. There are different things that you set for tournaments. But you want me to play, so let's go back. And let's go back. And let's go to a robot tournament. Where's that free tournament? Starts in 3 minutes. Oh, I don't want to go back. Let's go back to, go way, way back. Competitive. What do I want? Well, let's play solitaire. I haven't done this before. This just played bridge. Okay, so the robots announce what their bids mean. So one club is a minor suit opening, 3+ clubs, 11 to 21 high card points. That's four. It's 4 points for an ace, 3 for a king, 2 for a queen, 1 for a jack, 12 to 22 total points. That's including distribution, where you give yourself points for long suits or shortages. So what do we want to do here? Well, I have 12. I have 4, 8, 9, 10, 11. I have 15 points, so that's enough to bid one no trump in the 2-over-1 system. 15 to 17 points, and I have a guard in clubs. I don't have a 5-card major suit because it's easier to make a game in a major suit like spades or hearts. So I'm going to bid one no trump, and it says when you're playing in practice here, it explains what your one no trump means. One no trump or call 2 to 5 of each suit, 15 plus points, 18 minus, and stop in clubs. So I have a stop in clubs. I have 15 to 18 points. So I'm bidding one no trump, and I get to play it. So here are the, here's the lead. I've got, what do I have? I have to lose. I'm going to make a ace and queen of hearts. Probably, maybe I might make the 9. I'll make the ace of clubs and the ace of diamonds. Spades, I might make 2 or 3 tricks. I have to lose the ace king at least. But I can't be able to make 2 tricks in spades. And I have to make 6 tricks plus 1 is 7. So here's heart, I'll play low. And I can take that. I'd like to set up the diamonds if I could. Because if I get rid of the king and queen, then I can. Set up the 10, 9, 8. So that's 8 diamonds gone. There's 9, 10, 11. There's 2 diamonds out. The queen and another one. Now, what do I do with this spade? Question is, basically, where is the 10? I could put the queen or jack on, but I could take a chance that West here has the 10 of spades and play low. Or put the 7 on. And let's take a chance. That lost. So now I have to lose at least the ace king. Oh, that's interesting. That will set up my 6 if the 10 appears. And it does. Hands are in the wrong place, obviously. And all I want. Let's get rid of that. And my 6 of hearts. Now, I'd like to set up the diamonds. It's going to be a little hard. Unless they, oh, now the queen of diamonds is still out. Queen. Ace. I might as well dig out the last part. There's the queen. I don't know if diamonds left, mind you. There's just a club. So they took seven tricks, and I took six. You can tell by if it's long this way, it's tricks my way. If it's long that way, then it's tricks their way. So six tricks taken. I wasn't vulnerable, so I'm minus 50. You lose 50 points for each trick. And if we compare to the players online, these are what they've played. Apparently, these people have been playing for ages, or at least they've made like 12,000 points. They probably may played a lot of boards, a lot of different boards. So,
Tom, can you review the bidding on that last hand?
I can't do it on that hand. I could look at another hand that I've played and review the bidding on that if you like.
Well,
But I can
it
review the
kind of
bidding on
skipped
this
past
hand.
the bidding, really, didn't it?
It did because basically the points were balanced. But let's see here. East pass. I've got 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 4 are 11, 12. I've got 15 points and a singleton. I've got a good hand. With a singleton, I don't want to bid no trump, so I bid one spade. I've got five of them. Whoops. I made a mistake. Oh, no. They bid one to trump. Okay. They bid one no trump. That's a forcing one no trump. They have three or fewer spades. They have 6+ points, but they have maximum of 12. Well, I have a second suit. I can bid clubs and show them what's that. It looks like we're probably going to play no trump. Oh, well, they bid spades, so they have 2 to 3 spades, 6 to 9 points. And so there's no point if they have only 6 to 9 points and I have 15. There's a total of 40 points in the deck. There's 10, basically there's 10 points in each suit. So I have 15 points and they have 6 to 9. So we have 21 to 24 points. So we have the majority of the points because if we have 21, the opponents have 19. If we have 26, then the opponents have, if we have 24, then the opponents have 16 points between them. So this is enough. I don't want to bid any further. To make a game, you usually need approximately 25 points in high cards and distribution. And I have 15 and then maybe and two more for the singleton, 17. But he doesn't have a fit with me in clubs. He was hoping I'd bid hearts probably, but I don't have 2, 4 hearts, so that's why I didn't bid them. And so he just returned to spades. So he only has 2 spades. He's got 3, 4, 5. He has exactly 6 points. He's got a lot of diamonds, but only 6 points. Even though he does have like 3 nines and a couple of tens. So that's basically how you play bridge. You bid to exchange information. I'll claim contract down 8. We'll get to another hand. Maybe we can get some more exciting bidding here. So I've got
Maybe
you
we
know.
should call it quits, Tom. You've probably hit your time limit here.
Oh, is it day 30? Yeah.
No, but we've got other things to do, other things to do. So thanks
Okay,
very much for that, Tom. And people were asking how to play. I guess that gave them a quick and dirty on how you actually play bridge. Very
okay,
interesting
don't.
game if anybody wants to try it out. And I'm sure that practicing against robots is very useful.
Well, especially it's good for one's ego. Because when you're starting to learn and you're playing against people who even know a little bit more than you, they're going to be mad at you. It's good, in fact, if you can start off as a partnership, but even then your opponents tend to be mad at you.
Okay, all right, thanks very much, Tom. Okay, so next up we have 7 ways to improve your phone from our friend Chris.
Yeah, thanks, Alan. So this is one of our YouTube techs. So this Theo Joe, he has a YouTube channel and he has a lot of very useful information. The URL is at the bottom there, and I'm going to paste that into the chat right now. So he started off by saying there's actually more than seven here. I added in one or two, and he added in one. He said the first one up there, lower screen brightness and use low power or battery saving mode. He said those were so obvious that he didn't really count them as one of his seven. But those certainly lower your battery usage. If your phone has an OLED screen, using dark mode can save a lot of battery power, and the reason is that if it's not an OLED screen, there's an always-on backlight that happens. So even if it's a black pixel, it actually has a backlight in behind it, whereas on an OLED screen, it is only activating those pixels that are actually lighting up that you see, and so that can actually save a fair amount of power for you. Is this going to work for me? There we go. Use Wi-Fi rather than cellular. So all phones do have the capability of either using the cellular data or a Wi-Fi connection. And Wi-Fi actually uses less power than the cellular data does. So if you are on Wi-Fi, if you're on Wi-Fi, you have to. But rather than leaving them both on all the time, it's not a bad idea to use Wi-Fi whenever you can. But a good point on this is that if you're in an area where you're not going to be using the Wi-Fi, turning off the Wi-Fi will save you the power for that. As he points out in his video, though, if you start doing this and turning off your Wi-Fi when you're in an area where you're not going to be using Wi-Fi, make sure you remember to turn it back on when you do actually want to use it, like when you're at home and connecting to your own Wi-Fi network or something like that. You can find out which apps are using the most power. So all of the phones or the operating systems have the ability to go into the power and show what apps or facilities of the phone have been using how much power. So if you see that there is an app that is either not really important or whatever, you could actually restrict its background use so that it doesn't activate unless it's in the foreground. Or if you see some unneeded apps, you might want to just uninstall them if they're using power and you're not actually using that app. You can see how often your phone is checking for new email, and they have, he talked about push notifications, which I think is specific to iOS and Apple devices. If you have push notification turned on, basically it's checking for mail all the time. And so that can increase power usage. So turning off push notification can help. And also, if you're on a phone where it is polling periodically, rather than polling every 15 seconds, you might want to have it poll every 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or something like that to reduce the amount of power used. He points out that replacing the battery sometimes is the best thing. So if your battery is getting bad, replacing the battery might be your best bet. Avoid fast charging. Fast charging is problematic for life of batteries, overall life of batteries. So you can turn that off. And then all of them have the ability to either do optimized battery charging, as they call it on iOS, or adaptive charging under the app Android world. And what that will do, at least on the Android side, I know what it does, it learns from how you charge your device. So if you charge your device every night before you go to bed, it'll learn from that. What it'll do is it'll charge your device to about 80% and then turn off charging. And then just before you typically get up, it will actually finish charging up to the 100%. And so it is better for your phone to always be at less than 100%. So this helps that all night long is sitting at 80% rather than it's sitting at 100%. And then this last one is one that I added on. Keep charge between 40% and 80% on your phone is ideal. But don't sweat it too much. If you are going out and you know that your charge you know, the length of time you're going to be away from charging is going to be fairly lengthy. You know, feel free to go ahead and charge it up to 100% so that your phone doesn't die while you're out there. But in an ideal situation, keeping it between about 40% and 80% is actually best for the phone. And that's all I have for that. Let's just see, do we have anything? AMOLED plus OLED, Tom mentions. And that's it for that. Okay, so I'll go on to my next share tonight, and that's another YouTube tech one, and it comes from the folks who brought you Linus Tech Tips, and it's all about ad blocking DNS. So
before you go on to that, with regard to batteries, if your battery is kind of part of it and you can't quite replace the battery, if you want your battery to live a long life to be useful, because I'm still using my Pixel 6, and the battery is about 96% of its original capacity according to AccuBattery, and that's because I keep the charge level between 20 and 60% usually, and if you keep your battery below 80%, it'll last for years as opposed to die inside of 2 or 3 years. So try to keep your, if you can, it depends on your schedule and how convenient it is for you, but try to keep it between 20 and 60 if you can conveniently.
Yeah. Another one that wasn't on the list there, but is important is heat. And so batteries, lithium ion batteries are not happy when they get too cold or too hot. And too hot can definitely permanently damage the ability to hold a charge, and getting too cold typically will cause it to not hold the current charge as well. So keeping your phone in reasonable things like, you know, 10 degrees to 25 or 30 degrees is certainly going to be better than letting it go up to 38, 40 degrees, things like that. Don't leave your phone in your closed-in car in the middle of the summer while you go away, things like that. So that's another tip on there. So on this one here, ad blocking DNS, I thought this was kind of interesting. So the whole idea that the premise behind this was that it would actually speed up your browsing, because if you block ads, they're not taking up bandwidth as you're downloading all these ads and processing when you have scripts that are running as part of ads and things like that. And I will put that into the chat. Let me just give you a second here. Okay, onward. Come on, there we go. So DNS is the domain name system or domain name service, depending on who you talk to. And it's basically the phone book to the internet. And what it does is it translates domain names such as opcug.ca or doubleclick.net into an IP address that your computer can actually use to connect and load content from that particular server or domain. So what you do is you change your DNS server setting, and you use a DNS server that knows about servers used to deliver ads, and it will basically block those. So it is not able to deliver the content from those particular servers. So when ads are removed from your web browsing, you'll get faster browsing because there's less content to load, as well as I mentioned, a lot of the ads have scripts built into them, so your computers or your whatever device is, it is not having to process those scripts. You have less annoying browsing because you don't have to see the ads. Now, it won't reformat the pages, so you just see a blank spot where the ad would have appeared. Potentially, you could have more secure browsing. Some malware has been delivered via ads, so there's potential there for benefit. And you have no browser extensions that you have to load in, which there's a lot of browser extensions for eliminating ads, but this, you don't have to maintain a browser extension, and you don't have to install any additional software on your computer. So they listed a number of ones out there. Most of them are free or have a limited version that is available for free. And so the limited version ones are things like the first two there, where they'll give you 300,000 free DNS queries per month, and then it'll continue functioning as a DNS server for all your other needs, but it will revert to no filtering after the 300,000. And for that, you'll pay, if you want the unlimited queries or a huge number of queries, you're looking at Canadian, about $27.90 a year, or in the case of AdGuard, $20 a year US, and that'll give you 10 million queries, which should be more than enough for anybody's usage. There are some totally free ones, Libre DNS. It's crowdsourced, so people can contribute to the list of known advertising services, and they also eliminate tracking, known tracking domains. And it's completely free. Control D is one that doesn't seem to have a limited version available for free, so they have a US $12 per year per computer or device. And then the dCloud US one I thought was kind of interesting. They actually say on their website, they say it's free, but it's prone to downtime. So they have only one server in Germany that is available for dCloud US on the free side. And I'd be very concerned about using that, because if it's prone to downtime and you lose your DNS server, it means you basically can't get to anywhere on the internet. But they do have a paid version, which is not throttled. This, I guess, is reliable, and it has servers around the world. And then there's Blah DNS, which is free. They have donationware, where they have a button you can click on if you like them, and you can give them a little bit of money. And they have servers just in Singapore and Germany. And then Aha DNS Blitz, free again, donationware, where you can click a button to give the money. And they claim to have servers, quote, in most major cities of the world. So those are the ones that they actually talk about on there. There are other ones around, but if you're interested in trying this out, those are probably decent ones to start with. I personally would actually look to the first couple. 300,000 free DNS queries per month is probably enough for a lot of people, and it will continue to work as a regular DNS server after that. And if you're really happy with it and want to spend a little bit of money, it's probably not totally unreasonable to pay those amounts. There are the totally free ones if you wanted to try those out as well. So
questions,
that's all.
Chris, does the OS matter, and is it browser specific?
It is not browser specific, so it is the DNS server that your computer is using for anything that it has to go out on the internet to contact a given domain. And it is not OS specific either, because again, it's just the DNS server that you're pointing to. So it's when your computer has to use the internet phone book to find something out on the internet, whether it's a browser, whether it's an email client, whether it's a Windows update service, anything like that, that it has to look up a domain name, it will actually be using this DNS server rather than the one that is typically provided by your ISP, unless you've set it to something else like Google's 8.8.8.8 or Quad 9 for malware reduction, 9.9.9.9, or any of the other servers out there that are available for DNS services.
Harvey says he has open DNS on his Bell modem, but it doesn't block ads.
Yeah, the most of the ones that people use for malware avoidance, like OpenDNS can do that, as well as Quad9 and things like that, most of them don't actually aim to block ads. Unfortunately, you're looking at one or the other. I currently am using Quad9. For malware avoidance. And so I'm not really interested in giving up that to switch over so that I'm using something that only avoids ads and doesn't avoid malware sites. So for me personally, I'm happy with sticking with what I've got. But if somebody is not so inclined, you know, this can at least do something for you. I see a message from Elizabeth O'Driscoll, not sure how to use the service. The sites that are listed there will give you instructions on how to set it up. You can set it up on your computer or your phone or whatever, or you can set it up on your router if you have a home router, and you just point to that DNS service rather than what is provided by your internet service provider. Instructions are there. If you get stuck on it, email me and I can help you get that set up.
Okay, thanks very much, Chris. I'm talking about getting rid of ads on services. Here's a website, a YouTube video that I found that's really kind of interesting. Pat Gelsinger is the CEO of Intel Corporation. And Linus Torvalds, everybody probably knows, is a developer of Linux. And this is a part of an innovation conference. But it's really just kind of a sit-down, a chit-chat about Linux and open source and other kind of current technologies. And it's just an interesting discussion. And he also tells you about why he chose the penguin as the Tux penguin as the mascot for Linux. So you want to know all of the above, just check out that video. It's really quite interesting. Okay, next up we have a follow-up from Bob Harris on his ideogram, and I think he's got an extra utility that he can use.
Okay, thank you, Alan. Do we have time for this? It's a 15 or so anyway.
Yeah, I think we're okay.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, folks. Here, I'll get this set up here. Here we go. And, okay. Let's see, wouldn't mind advancing. There. Oh, I went too far. Very good. Could you advance, please, Alan?
Sure.
Thank you. Oh, I'm missing the first slide. Okay. Okay. Very good. Wow. Okay.
If you want, we can put it off till next week. If you want,
maybe we better. It's the wrong slides here.
Okay, because
it's the wrong deck. It's the wrong deck. Yeah. I see this slide has changed too. It's okay. The wrong deck too. Probably my error. I'm sorry. That was the wrong one.
Not a problem. We're into the last 10 anyway, so we can switch over to using it, and we can postpone your presentation
okay.
Next week.
Very good. Sorry, okay. Sorry, folks.
No, that's no problem.
Okay, so do we have any other questions? I didn't see anything I missed in the chat, but
I haven't
if you did,
either.
Now's the time
but
to ask.
Yeah. So, folks, you can either unmute yourself and ask verbally, or throw something into the chat. And I have not seen anything additional yet. So I think, how about Alan, we continue on with the
Tom's
the
raising his hand. You got
oh,
a question,
sorry.
Tom? No.
Oh, okay.
All right, there's a question here. On the topic of YouTube, why does it require sign-in, and is there a way around it? Okay, it doesn't require a sign-in for me. I do get ads.
Yeah, I think if your browser is signed in, it'll automatically pick up on that.
Signed into what, though?
Well, you can end up with the browser being signed into a Google account. But I guess if you're not signed in and you go to YouTube, actually, let me just try one here. I'm going to go with a different browser with an in-private window. And because I'm suspicious that this is not universal. Let me try. I'm just going to YouTube. And it says it has a sign-in button. And I don't see. Yeah. Well, if you do a search, I find that if I'm not signed in and I do a search, it will actually go and find things on the search. but it doesn't seem to come up with anything if you just hit on the home button. Let me just share this, and I'm going to share. So this one here, I have the Brave browser, and it is not logged in to anything. So when I go to YouTube, it says try searching to get started. I could sign in, and if I actually sign into a Google account, it will come up with more information. It will come up with suggested videos and things like that. But if I was to just can't remember what the guy's name was anyways. But if I do a search, I can end up finding videos and then go ahead and watch particular videos. So I don't think you have to be signed in, but if you want it to be personalized where you have your subscriptions, channels you subscribe to, the ability to bookmark videos for watching later and things like that, of course you end up having to be signed in. So I guess the question that I would ask on this one here is, are you getting the ability without being signed in to search for anything on YouTube? That's sort of, I guess, the question that I would have about this. And I've lost my chat windows and things like that, so I'm not.
She says she's trying now.
Oh, okay.
There's a question here.
If you want to, you can also get a premium account for about $100 or $120 a year, and that gets you out of all of the ads on your computer or your TV or your phone, no matter wherever you're logged in on. So that may be if you access YouTube a lot and you find the ads irritating and you can't find a way to get rid of them, then you may want to use the premium service.
Yeah. I'm not about to spend that kind of money to watch YouTube videos, but I guess some people do.
Sorry, you don't have to log in YouTube to do a search. I just did it.
Yeah, I found the same thing in my searching where I'm not logged into the browser. I do have the ability to sign in, but I can do a search, and it just won't come up with suggested videos and things like that.
Logging in gets you a history, so you can go back and review things. It also gets you you can subscribe. When you subscribe, you have to have an ID, and then those things can come up or show up. If you go into the library, you can look at each or all of your subscriptions to see what has come up in each of them easily, and it's a way of keeping track of things inside of YouTube. So it can be very useful to have to be signed in if you use YouTube a lot.
Yeah, and another thing too is that if you use Gmail, the browser session that you're logged into with Gmail, if you just open up a new tab and you go to YouTube, you'll automatically be logged in under that Gmail account. So all Gmail accounts are Google account, and so that's all that's needed, or that's all they're prompting you for on YouTube, is to be logged into a Google account. So you'll find that if you do use Gmail, that browsing session will automatically be logged in.
Yeah, and that's actually, Chris, why I've never noticed this issue before, because when I'm in my browser, I'm almost always logged into Google Groups for the PC user group. So if I then go to YouTube, I just see a standard YouTube screen with a whole bunch of, suggested videos.
Yeah, and in the top right-hand corner, you'll see your profile picture will be up there.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know that there's any benefit to not being logged in to YouTube other than, potentially you're giving YouTube a bunch of information about things and they're getting stored on Google servers. But, I mean, they're tracking you when you're watching something on YouTube anyhow. So, I don't know.
Okay, Mark, didn't see any other questions in the chat window there. So just to wrap things up for tonight, the newsletter came out yesterday or today, I forget which, and there's an article in there talking about this idea of remote assistance to club members and basically looking for volunteers to provide such assistance. So you want to read that article and see if you can provide any kind of help to people on specific topics or general topics, whatever you think you know most about. We'd like to hear from you. So if you can help, then just send us an email to the usual suggestion box address. Tell us what you think you'd like to help with, and we'll add you to the list. Okay, next week is the 25th, and it will be another Q&A session. So if you have any questions that we haven't answered tonight, if you have any topics that you'd like to share, very much like Tom did with his bridge online, people found that very interesting. Even the people who didn't know how to play bridge, Tom found it interesting. So anything you have answers or shares, send us a brief note and we'll add you to the agenda. Otherwise, I think that's everything from me tonight.
Yeah, just before we quit, I noticed from Elizabeth about remote assistance. I'd like to help, but I'm not an expert. We're not necessarily looking for just experts. The way that we see this coming about in the future, when we actually go live, where we're offering to have people send in queries for that, is we're hoping that they'll say, "Okay, I'm having a problem." They'll say, "I'm having a problem with a specific thing," and then what we'll do is we'll send that out to everybody who has volunteered to help out and say, "Okay, here we've got this problem. Can anybody out there help out with it?" And so if you turn out to be, say you happen to be using a particular service, and you might be able to help them out. You could say, "Oh, I could take that," and then we'll put the people in touch one-on-one at that point. So you don't have to be an expert on anything. You can also just decide that you'd like to lurk, that you don't think you're going to be able to help out with anything, but if you happen to see something come up, then you might be able to. That's perfectly fine. So yeah, don't feel that you have to be an expert in anything to volunteer. So if you can help out, just send it into suggestion box, and we'll add you to the list. So you'll see all of the requests for assistance that come by, and you can just ignore any that you can't help with, and jump in if you think you can.
Okay, so thanks everyone for attending. Hope you found it interesting, and we'll see you all next week.
Thanks, folks.